You're listening to Talk Radio Europe. On the TRE app, your smart speaker, and on air. This is TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world.
BBC News with Danielle Jaworowiecka. President Trump has said the US negotiating team is on its way to the Pakistani capital Islamabad for a new round of talks with Iran. The New York Post quotes Mr. Trump as saying he assumes that at this point nobody's playing games. The current ceasefire between the US and Iran is due to end on Wednesday. Tehran has continued to give mixed signals on whether it will attend the talks. Esmail Baghaei is spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry.
So far, we have no plans for the next round of negotiations, and no decision has been made in this regard. After that, an understanding was reached on Lebanon. We were faced with their actions in the Strait of Hormuz, including what they have termed a naval blockade. In just the past hours, you witnessed that an attack was carried out on an Iranian commercial vessel. All of these are considered clear violations of the ceasefire.
The Lebanese president, Joseph Aoun, has said that planned bilateral talks with Israel are aimed at ending hostilities and Israel's occupation of the south of Lebanon. Mr. Aoun said that he'd made the choice for negotiation in the hope that it could prevent further war. Israel has warned people not to return to their homes in the south. The European Police Agency says it's traced 45 Ukrainian children taken away by Russia. Europol brought together 40 open-source specialists from 18 countries alongside experts from the International Criminal Court. Anna Holligan reports from The Hague.
Investigators identified Russian military units in which deported Ukrainian children may now be fighting against their own people. They reconstructed transport routes, pinpointed some of the officials, institutions and members of the armed forces suspected of organising their illegal transfer. They also flagged some of the re-education camps and online platforms displaying photos of the young people thought to be among what Kyiv estimates to be more than 19,000 Ukrainian children deported since the full-scale invasion began in 2022.
Reports from Ethiopia say the Tigray People's Liberation Front is to restore a regional parliament whose disputed election 6 years ago helped trigger civil war. It'll replace an interim administration set up under a peace deal 3 years ago. Richard Kagoy reports.
The Tigray People's Liberation Front had been locked in a power struggle with the interim administration based in the regional capital Mekele. The group has opposed the extension of its mandate for another year. Analysts warn the move could undermine efforts to implement the fragile peace deal signed in Pretoria 4 years ago. The civil war erupted in 2020 and killed more than 500,000 people. It came after months of feuding between the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and leaders of the TPLF, which had dominated politics there for 3 decades until Mr. Abiy took office in 2018 after anti-government protests.
World news from the BBC.
TRE Talk Radio Europe.
The Spanish news is brought to you by Linea Directa. Linea Directa for no nonsense car, bike, and home insurance. Call 919 181 130.
Good afternoon. The two largest trade union groups in the fuel retail sector have called strike action at petrol stations across the country in a bid to unblock negotiations over a new collective agreement. The UGT, the FICA and the CCOO unions announced stoppages affecting the service station sector after talks with employers failed to produce an agreement on pay and working conditions. The planned stoppages are scheduled for April the 30th when workers are due to strike from midday until 4 a.m. and on May the 3rd when a 24-hour strike has been called. The dispute centres on the National Collective Agreement covering employees in petrol stations, including forecourt staff, shop workers and other personnel. The application window for migrant regularisation officially opened earlier this month. The plan allows some 500,000 undocumented foreigners to apply for legal residency and work permits. But Elon Musk has branded the move electoral engineering and treason. The government argues the reform will fix labour shortages in agriculture and tourism whilst boosting Social Security revenue. Musk's latest remarks were posted on social media following a recent speech by Pedro Sanchez in Barcelona, where the Prime Minister said the policy was both necessary and economically beneficial. In response, Mr. Musk criticised the move, repeating concerns he has previously expressed about migration policies in Europe. The housing crisis is about to move back to the centre of the political agenda, with the government expected to take its new state housing plan to tomorrow's cabinet meeting. The package is valued at some 7 billion euros and is being presented as a major attempt to expand public housing, support younger people and ease pressure in parts of the country where access to a home has become increasingly difficult. Government papers describe it as a step towards building a public housing system closer to European standards. The housing minister, Isabel Rodriguez, said the ministry will seek final approval of the plan after months of discussions with regional governments. Official government strategy says 60% of the money will come from the state and 40% from the regions, and is the first major housing plan framed under the 2023 housing law. And a 19-mile partially underground new train line in Mallorca has been given final approval by the Balearic Islands authorities. It will connect the island's capital with its airport and a major tourist town. The new line will have over six of its 19-mile length underground and will have 13 stations connecting Palma, Palma de Mallorca Airport and the south coast, and is expected to be operational in 2032. A total of 20 trains will be purchased for the line and is expected to carry some 8.5 million passengers a year. That's the latest from TRE. I'm Bob James.
The Spanish news is brought to you by Linear Director. Linear Director for no-nonsense car, bike and home insurance. Call 919 181 130.
Safeguard your home while you're away and protect it from illegal entry. Linea Directa presents Squatter Protection. If squatters gain access, you'll get compensation for any damages, and it even covers loss of rental income. Linea Directa, with its legal assistance service, will help you through the entire process.
Linea Directa Squatter Protection costs just €24 a year. It's completely independent and there's no need to have home insurance.
Call Linea Directa today on 919 181 130. That's 919 181 130. Terms and conditions apply.
Watching a movie in its original version makes for an authentic experience, and watching it in pure comfort with the highest quality sound and images makes for a Kinepolis experience. Come enjoy the movies in English and in style at Kinepolis Cinema in La Cañada, Marbella. Tickets available online at kinepolis.es.
Discover the Clubhouse Marbella, your go-to spot for fun and entertainment, located beneath La Sala Porta Banús. Meet the team of expert PGA professionals to enjoy daily premier golf coaching using Trackman-powered golf simulators. Challenge your friends to F1 racing, pool, shuffleboard, or Dartsy dartboards, and catch every game on over 50 screens. The lively atmosphere is perfect for a day out or a night of excitement. Bring the whole family midweek for an afternoon of games, and don't miss happy hour from 5 till 7 p.m. Eat, drink, watch, play at the Clubhouse Marbella. Email reservations at clubhousemarbella.com or call 951 204 835.
Talk Radio Europe.
You're listening to TRE in the Afternoon with Hannah Murray. Brought to you by the Clubhouse by Sala. Get ready to eat, drink, watch and play at the ultimate sports venue on the coast. Find out more at clubhousemarbella.com. TRE in the Afternoon. Presented by Hannah Murray.
True. keep you by my side. I got lips that long to kiss you and keep you satisfied. If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you, to you, to you, to you.
The Beatles and From Me to You. It is Monday and it's just gone 5:10, which means it's time for this.
TRE's Entrepreneur of the Week.
And today's Entrepreneur of the Week is Sonia Allinson Penny. She's an international strategic HR consultant and founder of the Human Factor Health Check, a company which conducts due diligence assessments for investors on the human elements behind startup success. Her book, The Human Factors Behind Startup Success, dives deeper into the subject. Welcome to the show, Sonia.
Thanks, Hannah. Great to be here.
Ah, lovely to have you with us. So explain this, first of all, the Human Factor Health Check. What is that? How does it work?
Simply put, it's working on behalf of investors when they are looking to give some money to a startup company. And I help them to look at whether the human part of their business is sound. Oftentimes people are a bit scared about the human side because it's less tangible, it's harder to measure. It's much easier to look at the balance sheet and look at the numbers or the product idea, which is typically how we think about startup companies, are a great idea, but you can really miss a trick if you're not looking at the human dynamics that sit behind that company.
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And also you have to like the person and feel like you want to work with the person, don't you? I mean, that should be step one, I assume.
100%. I mean, my job is to be objective and independent. but what I am measuring, and I write about this in the book actually, is that although the investors feel that they are employing me to assess their startup companies on their behalf, the reality is I'm measuring the relationship between the investor and the startup company. Mm. So startup companies can be a bit nervous actually about accepting funding from investors. Who would have thought? But they sometimes fear that there's going to be too much control, which could be a founded fear. I've actually had some of the companies that I've assessed give me the feedback that they feel sometimes their investors are a bit too hands-off. They wish that they would give them a bit more input or guidance or a little bit more control. It's almost like parenting to some extent. So of course, that comes down to the fit between the founding team, the CEO, his or her team, and the particular investor and their take on it, because no two investors are the same. They come at it from a very different angle. And sometimes the fit is really, really magical. And sometimes you can really see, you know, I'm going to be curious to see how this one works out. And so part of my job is, if they're open-minded to it, is to give some feedback about the interplay between those relationships, that dynamic, rather than just talk about the company itself that is looking for the funding.
And do you find people are honest with you to say whether they want to be hands-on or not? You know, how willing are they to give you that kind of information?
Really good question. So from the sort of more geeky side of what I do, I never rely on one part of data, just one data source. So I cross-tabulate lots of different things that I ask them. And I always collect objective data in advance through, say, personality psychometrics, or I have a survey where I ask all employees to complete. And I look at the alignment between what leaders are telling me versus what the employees are telling me. So if you think about the best measure of leadership effectiveness is not what leaders tell me about themselves, because what that's measuring is their good intent. The best measure of leadership effectiveness is what the employees are telling me the reality is like on the shop floor. Mm. And so I hold the data up to the leaders in an interview and say, well, this is what you answered and this is what your employees answered. So there's a real disincentive to give an overly rosy picture, because they know I'm going to be validating that picture and be questioning them about it in an interview. So part of my job is to gain trust fairly early on, but I find it really helps to have some objective data to start that trustful relationship from. The first thing I say is that I'm not here to catch you out. Although I'm doing an assessment on behalf of an investor, our job is to actually help your business to succeed. So our job is to accelerate the likelihood of you succeeding. So yeah. Better to get some of that honesty up front than find out in 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, definitely. And do you find a lot of investors that you're working with, do they have lots of different reasons as to why they're investing in particular companies? I mean, are they looking for a company that they're particularly interested in, or does that not necessarily matter?
Oh, we run the risk of a dangerous rabbit hole here. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
because you've got the kind of the more formal answer, which is that investors typically have got a focus area. They can't invest in everything. So as an example, I work with one company which only invests in social impact companies. So mm-hmm. something where the environment is going to benefit. There's a lot of science companies here looking at planetary considerations. So that's their focus. Other more standard investors might decide that they want to look at deep tech. AI, of course, is the hot thing right now where all the funds are going to. Others will focus on healthcare or specifically female healthcare as an example. So they tend to be specialisms. That's the formal answer. And then the informal answer is something called affinity bias, which means that we are more likely to, you said earlier, you want to be able to like the people you're working with, that the decision-making can be biased. So if you imagine that you have three companies that have all got a fantastic product market fit, they've got a great idea that is addressing a pain point in the market, but you're believing in the founders, you're believing in the people, well, then bias starts to creep in. And if that person looks, speaks, feels like you, it's totally human nature. So there's no judgment involved, but it is human nature for those investments to flow towards people who you feel more familiar with, because at the end of the day, your job is to mitigate risk, is to lower risk. Mm. And our brains are hardwired to see others as risk.
Yeah.
So that's like a real side point that I touch on in the book around part of my job is to call out if I see bias. And that's some of the more sensitive, tougher things that I need to do. Yeah.
And I'm sure, even though people wouldn't like to admit it, that people do still judge a book by its cover. You know, if somebody looks a certain way, and I'm not going to say what that certain way might be, but people might think, oh, no, they look like they might be aggressive, or they look like they might, you know, enjoy a drink at the weekend. Or, you know, just literally by the way they look, they might decide the kind of person that they could be, which could, of course, be totally wrong.
Yep, 100% agree. And I mean, and this is it, the question of fairness. It's not that the idea is any less sound. And there's a lot of data actually to say that non-typical forms of investments can actually get you higher returns. So we know for a fact that it's not necessarily an unbiased decision. However, I'm not a wilting flower. I'm an East End girl myself, from London, and sometimes it can be the social mobility that we need to look at rather than something that's actually more evident in terms of appearances. Sometimes it can be the way that you string a sentence together, as an example, that there can be a judgment about that or a bias about that in terms of your degree of intellect. So we need to be really careful to make sure when we do a due diligence process, so I'm only one part of it, but other people are looking at the how sound is the product idea, the tech that sits behind it, the degree of need in the market. And these things are also designed to help an investor to navigate some of these difficult waters and to make sure that they're taking a completely objective data-based view about the likelihood of this company succeeding or not. But we are all only human and we're all still learning with regards to some of these biases. So I'm at the stage of my career where impact is important. And I'm also at the stage of my career where I can be fairly independent and speak truth to power.
Yeah.
And so I do get the opportunity. I mean, I actually got some praise for the book from a New York exited founder who said, one of the things I think gives your book credibility is the fact that you call it as you see it in terms of the investor relationship with the portfolio company and things like affinity bias, because the only way that the industry is going to mature and evolve is if we're brave enough to actually call some of those things out. And there are some fantastic investors who are leading the way in saying, okay, fair enough, hold my hand up. Understand that in the past, potentially that's been a problem. How can we arm ourselves? How can we educate ourselves? What can we do differently? So it's one of the reasons I'm motivated to continue to be in the industry and to help grow it, is because I see that there's some real positive change that's happening out there by what I would call pioneering investors.
Yeah. And how did you get into this line of work?
I did a degree in finance because I didn't want to focus on the HR side of things. I saw that it wasn't taken seriously. It was predominantly staffed by women, and I wanted to get into the more hard side of business. Then I discovered when I went out into the real world that interpersonal stuff really matters, and what we're not great at is measuring it. And so I then balanced my love of data, finance, statistics, economics with interpersonal dynamics and look at how can we measure some of the more tougher things in the past that we've tended to shy away from. And an investor that was investing in a company that I was working for, so I was their interim group head of HR at the time, saw some of the work that I was doing and asked me whether I would consider designing from scratch their due diligence methodology. And that's the reason I wrote the book in the end, because of course I said yes. I'm quite geeky about these things. I thought, wow, what an opportunity, blank sheet of paper, I get to design this from scratch. But some humility, I'd like to know that I'm following some kind of guided path about how do others do it or what's typically done. There was nothing documented that I could refer to.
Wow.
And so 8 years in, that's why I decided to write the book, so that others that come after me who are curious about the topic can pick up a book and say, well, look, here's my thoughts about how you can navigate how to do that. There's a lot on mergers and acquisitions. Nothing on due diligence on the human side. And I got to the point where I've got 8 years worth of data now. And so I thought, okay, so I can start to have a voice about some of these topics. I'm seeing patterns I can start to communicate about.
Yeah.
So an investor invited me, I said yes, and 8 years later, here we are.
And obviously you've built up a client base and people know who you are and what you do. But initially, how do people, or what kind of people come to you? Is it the investors or is it the startup companies or both?
Great questions. Honestly, it's almost like you've done your homework. Like you know some of the things that are happening. So I started out with investors, and one of the things I'm most proud of is recommendations. Businesses grow a lot through recommendations, so that's always a pleasure when an investor recommends me to another one. But what I'm probably even more proud of now is that I've got a great track record of the companies themselves, and I'm assessing, saying this was the single most valuable part of the due diligence process, which can be quite painful for them. They've got a business to run at the same time that they're being thoroughly assessed by multiple different streams. But I've had experiences now where CEOs of companies that I'm not being asked to assess by an investor are contacting me and saying, I went to a CEO founder group and they basically said that this was a valuable part of giving them an objective view about the people side of their business. Would you mind doing an assessment on me? But actually, it's me, the CEO, who's going to be paying you and not the investor.
Mm.
And as a result of that, I've now got relationships with the investors of those companies that I didn't know before, because the company themselves said, you know, come and do a quick assessment on us so that we've got the information in advance of our funding round.
Ah, clever. So it works both ways. Both sides can get in touch with you.
Yeah, it requires a certain maturity and open-mindedness, of course, to be open to the feedback that you're going to get. But I think the important thing is there's no one right answer. No two companies are the same. And so it's really just using people data to inform and accelerate the growth of your business. So nothing to be frightened of. It's just data.
Mm.
I think that's the most important thing, that there's no judgment in there. Better to know than not to know.
Yeah.
And there's always a way that we can overcome any gaps.
And are there particular things that people should do, both as the CEO and also of the investor, before coming to someone like you? Are there particular steps that people should be doing to prepare to make sure they're in the right place?
My honest answer is, if you've not been doing some of the things that I'll be assessing fairly systematically or religiously before the chance I get to do an assessment, it's probably not going to make any difference in a short period just before the assessment. It's not something you could do a quick fix for the week before.
And
I can spot it a mile off, actually, if someone's trying to game an answer. It becomes very evident because of the robustness of the methodology. Like I said, I don't just rely on one data source, and I can see it if the data sources aren't adding up. So it doesn't matter if there's not a fantastic result. One of the reasons that I do an alignment survey is that you can be 100% aligned between leaders and employees that things aren't great. I'd rather that than a massive gap between leaders telling me everything's fantastic and employees telling me no, it's not, or the other way around, actually. I've had one assessment where the leaders were really beating themselves up really to quite an extreme where they really needn't. The employees are actually happier than they'd realised. It's almost like a relief factor for them. So if you've not put in place some of the things that take a bit of effort and genuine intent, then I'm likely to see it. So you can't do anything in advance. But what we can do is then give you a really practical roadmap to help you for the next 3, 6, 12, 18 months, 5 years, to make sure that the things you perhaps didn't realise were important beforehand actually are, and you can put those in place afterwards.
That's really good.
So it doesn't have to be pass-fail.
Yeah, that's really good. So it's not just an assessment and then there's the paperwork from the assessment and bye-bye. You can help them to the things that come up in the assessment, put them into place afterwards. That's really good.
Yeah, they get a 12-month roadmap. I did one just this week, and I basically said to them, I've not put anything in your roadmap for another 6 to 9 months because I think it would be over-engineered. You've got so many other things, marketing, sales, product, tech. Yeah, there are so many other elements that the funding should go towards. And actually, they were too small at that point to do too much on the people side. I just gave them some really practical things to do. But the scale of their growth meant that the more employees that they're going to bring on in the next 12 months, by that point in time, it suddenly starts to become more important. But I go really careful not to over-engineer, because you can see the world through too small a lens, just the people lens. And what I try and do is to make sure that it's integrated with all the other things that the company is having to focus on, because there's a thing known as lonely founders. And it's lonely at the top for anybody. But when you're a founder and you're pioneering, you're doing something that is, you know, breaking all the rules or hasn't been done before, then literally you're on your own, because nobody has plotted this path before.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of support networks that you can reach out to. Unlike a corporate executive where there's probably some notes that they can share with each other. It's very different for founders.
Yeah. And does it make a difference? Are there industries that you don't know much about? And if you're faced with a company that you need to look into, does it make a difference that it's, you know, not a, an industry that you're familiar with, or does that not really come into it?
Yeah. Once again, fantastic insight. What's the honest answer? The honest answer is I haven't come across yet an industry where I feel uncomfortable.
Okay.
What I would say is that there's probably some common patterns that you see, that oftentimes there's a lot of tech involved. So you're talking about a workforce with engineers and technical type staff. The social impact, I can see some differences in the data between the social impact companies versus the pure profit making companies. But I've done every industry from funeral planning to, like I say, female health, to construction, to architecture, science. Cybersecurity is very common as well. So it tends to follow certain trends because the world is shifting, the markets are shifting, and therefore that's the way the investment funds tend to shift. Yeah, so the short answer is I've not come across that problem yet in terms of having an industry that I feel uncomfortable about to assess, because people are people are people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, interesting. Well, if people want to get a copy of your book, it's available on our website, tre.radio. It's called The Human Factors Behind Startup Success, and it's by Sonia Allinson-Penny, who we've been chatting with today. Sonia, thank you so much for joining us.
Brilliant. Thanks, Anna. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
TRE. Thinking about making the move to sunny Spain? Join over 242,000 Facebook group members already sharing their adventures in our vibrant Facebook groups, Expats in Spain and American in Spain. Find everything you need at expatsinspain.eu and americaninspain.com. Plus, explore our two monthly online magazines packed with tips, stories and local insights. Do you have a business in Spain? Then reach this incredible community. Advertise with us and connect directly with thousands of future customers who are ready to live their best life in Spain. Your dream move starts here. Spain is waiting. Hello, Spence Clark here, the tax and business accountants in Spain since 1985. People ask us if we're the best accountants in the area. Obviously, we think we are. But what defines being the best? Is it that we provide clients with management accounts in English? Is it that we provide free initial tax consultations? Or because we spend time getting to know our clients' circumstances so that we can provide the highest professional tax advice? Maybe it's because we don't put profit before client care. Or maybe it's the Spence Clark team that makes us the best. Why not find out for yourself by visiting spenceclark.com? Thank you for listening. This is
TRE.
Remember when going out without an umbrella could ruin your day? Here with Línea Directa Insurance, your only worry should be enjoying everything that makes living in Spain so special. Car, home, motorbike, pets and protection against squatters. We've got you covered. Discover why 9 out of 10 customers recommend us. Switch to Línea Directa and enjoy full protection with the best prices and coverage. Call 919 181 130. Conditions apply.
Hello, is that Anthony's Diamonds and Pawnbrokers?
Yes, good morning. What can I do for you?
I'm downsizing. I inherited some family heirlooms, a Chinese vase, some Chinese bowls and some paintings that I'm never going to use. And it's as you say, the kids don't want them and I don't need them. Can I WhatsApp you some photos?
Yes, of course, and we'll come straight back to you with a valuation. If you're happy with the price, we can come and collect and pay you in cash.
Really, it's that simple. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. If you or anyone you know have any jewellery, watches, broken or otherwise, antiques, Chinese or anything old, tell them to call Anthony's Diamonds on 609-529-633.
There's a pawn shop on the corner
in downtown Fuengirola.
Anthony's-diamonds.com, a place you can trust.
Want the best rates and peace of mind when sending money abroad? Lumon, your trusted currency partner, can help with quick, effortless and secure international money transfers. We already partner with some of the best real estate agencies and solicitors across Spain. So whether you're buying or selling a property, transferring your pension abroad, or simply paying your monthly bills, Lumon is here to help. Protecting your money is our highest priority at Lumon, so every transaction you make with us is safeguarded. Visit lumonpay.com to learn more about how we look after customers and help them save money on their international transfers. Terms and conditions apply. Lumon FX Europe Limited, trading as Lumon, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
TRE, your voice in Spain.
You're listening to TRE in the Afternoon with Hannah Murray. Brought to you by the Clubhouse by Sala. Get ready to eat, drink, watch and play at the ultimate sports venue on the coast. Find out more at clubhousemarbella.com. Hannah Murray. TRE in the Afternoon.
You got a smile so bright, you know you could have been a candle. I'm holding you so tight, you know you could have been a handle. The way you swept me off my feet, you know you could have been a broom. And baby, it smells so sweet, you know you could have been some perfume. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to. I can take it. The way you do the things you do. Alright, the way you do the things you do. As pretty as you are, you know you could have been a flower. You could have looked for a minute. You know you could have been an hour. The way you stole my yard, you know you could have been a girl. And baby, you're so smart. Could have been a schoolboy. Well, it could have been anything they wanted to. I can tell you.
way you do the things you do. I'm right the way you do the things you do. You make my life so rich. You know you could have been some money. And baby, you're so sweet. You know you could have been some money. Well, you could have been anything you wanted to. I can take the way you do the things you do. Alright, the way you do the things you do. As pretty as you are, you know you could have been a flower. Good looks were mending. You know you could have been an hour. The way you stole my love. You know you could have been a fool. And baby, you're so smart. You know you could have been a school boo. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to. I can take the way you do the things you do. Alright, the way you do the things you do.
UB40 and the way you do the things you do. It's just gone 25 to 6 and time to catch up with Freddie Lamb for this week's Sporting Roundup. How are you, Freddie?
I'm very good, Hannah. How are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Lots of drama in the football this weekend.
Oh, blimey. I mean, it didn't stop, really. It was here, there and everywhere. It was just goal fest galore everywhere.
So Man City beat Arsenal, which was a massive deal.
Yes, that was the big one. 4:30 yesterday, everyone was coining it as the game to win the title, and it was Man City who came out winners. They won it 2-1 in the end, and they closed the gap to 3 points with a game in hand. They'll play Burnley midweek. I think it's Wednesday night this week that they'll play them, and if they win that game, then they will probably go top on goal difference, depending on how much they win by. So it was quite an incredible game, really. I mean, I'd say Man City were probably in control of it the majority, but Arsenal, they played their usual way, but it wasn't enough. They definitely went there with the hopes of just at least getting a point, but walked away with nothing. And, you know, you look at the league now, I mean, there's a few games left, there's a handful, and Arsenal's running is harder than City's, and City in this situation, in this scenario, seasons that have gone by, they get this over the line and they don't crumble under the pressure. Arsenal have had another terrible May, April even. We're not quite in May yet. They've had a terrible April, and you know, it's one of their lowest point tallying months that they go through each season. It's where they've, on countless times over the last couple of years, lost the title in April. So It was a tricky one for them. Declan Rice was seen after the game saying it's not over. And it isn't over. Of course it's not. I mean, City have shown throughout the season that they can drop points. They are capable of that. But Arsenal have just had a dreadful, dreadful few weeks. Losing to Bournemouth and then losing to Southampton in the FA Cup. Losing to, obviously, City in the final of the League Cup. They're obviously still in the Champions League, so they could still maybe walk away with their first ever Champions League trophy. But no, it's a really tough one for Arsenal fans, and they'll probably be terrified for the next month or so, because you put your money on Man City now, and it's also the first time that City have led, if they beat Burnley, that is, it'll be the first time they've gone top since August. Arsenal have been top since then, so for them to lose it now would just be, it'd be terrible for them.
Yeah, nail-biting for both fans, I expect.
Absolutely. No one is sitting comfortably, that's for sure.
And we had the Merseyside derby as well.
We did, yeah. Talk about heart in your mouth. That was a 90-plus 10th-minute winner, 100th minute by Van Dijk for Liverpool to make it a 2-1 win. It was the first ever Merseyside derby at Everton's new stadium, the Hill Dickinson. So it was a big win for Liverpool in their search for Champions League football next season. They're now 8 points clear of Chelsea, who are in sixth. I keep getting confused. I wanted to say fourth, but I keep forgetting there's now 5 places for Champions League. I'm still getting my head around that as well.
Yeah.
It feels really weird that 5 teams now get Champions League football. I would keep saying the top four, but it's top 5 now, which is ridiculous. But yeah, so Liverpool, I mean, they've had an on and off season, that's for sure. It's not been the best play football at all, but massive win yesterday, not just because of the derby, but because of that Champions League football next season, which you would say now is theirs. Which is massive as well because of all the pressure on Arne Slot, the manager. I think that he will probably stay for next season. I think that Liverpool would probably be better off replacing him now because I just don't see this getting better in the long term. And I think that sometimes you have to count your losses earlier while the managers are available in the summer and maybe bring someone in better than you would in a few months, because it'd be terrible for them to sack him in November, let's say, and they could have done it in the summer and had a pre-season with a new manager and the players gotten to grips with them and maybe they won't get their first choice that way. So massive win, huge for their season, probably guarantees them Champions League football, but the question marks are still on the manager, that's for sure.
Yeah, and Spurs so close to having a win, but still no cigar.
No cigar. It stays in the drawer. The lighter unlit still this year. It was still waiting for their first league win of the season this calendar year. It's ridiculous. A 2-2 draw to Brighton. It was another 90 plus minute goal for Brighton. There were so many of them this weekend. It was I was checking the I do fantasy football and I was checking my phone, checking the scores the whole time, and I every single one I got comfortable with, suddenly the score changed and I was in the gutter. I couldn't believe it. But no, it was a massive weekend, especially for Brighton to keep their they've had 5 games unbeaten now, which is massive for them with their search for Europe. But for Spurs, yeah, they stay in that bottom 3 for now, and Forest beat Burnley 3-1 to strengthen their chances of staying up, which for Spurs fans is just very worrying. If they'd have drawn or lost on the weekend, but then Forest loses as well, then it's okay. But it didn't go that way at all. We've got Palace against West Ham this evening. And if West Ham get a result there, then, I mean, Spurs are in serious, serious trouble. I think it's something like 4 points adrift then instead of just one. So, you know, it's Spurs fans will be... they will be cheering for Crystal Palace tonight. They will put their London rivalry aside and they'll have their blue and red on. They'll have everything on tonight and they'll be crossing every single thing they can, because I think if West Ham win tonight, Spurs are, yeah, they could be as good as gone, which is an unbelievable thing to be saying.
Yeah, amazing. And what's been happening in the rugby?
Massive weekend for the rugby, yeah, in the Premiership. It was a Finn Smith. See, this is the thing. It wasn't just the football. It was the rugby as well. Finn Smith scored a try with 5 seconds to go for Northampton, which saw them beat Exeter 35-28 on the weekend, which keeps Northampton at the top of the Premiership table. Their closest rivals, Bath, their game was a lot more comfortable. They beat Harlequins 48-15. They say 1 point behind Northampton. I cannot wait for that game. That's coming up in a few weeks. Northampton Bath. That's going to be a try fest. That's going to be probably one of the games of the season. But it's not just about the two of them, because you've got to look lower down at the table. Newcastle having a terrible time in the Premiership, but Leicester, they beat them 62-3, and they're on the hunt for a chance at the Championship. Leicester, people have, I think they're focusing in on Northampton and Bath, maybe a little bit prematurely. But Northampton have shown that they can be strong, and then at the latter stage, a bit like Arsenal in a way, actually, they can lose a few games in that running. It doesn't look like they're going to this season. I think Northampton are very, very strong, and it will be them against Bath in the final of the Premiership. But I think Leicester are definitely the favourites to upset that. But I tell you what, Northampton versus Bath, they are just commanding this league. And Northampton have definitely shown in the last few weeks that they've won a couple of games at the right at the dead. Bath have seen seemed a lot more comfortable in the last few weeks. They've seen their games out a lot quicker. So it's definitely the two of them. I would, in the one-off game, I mean, we're going to see it in a couple of weeks, but I would say I would put my money on Bath. I think that they're stronger defensively. Northampton have shown weakness there. And I think going forward, they are both as strong as the other. But I think that defensive strength for Bath will see them, if they meet in the final, could see them lift the trophy. But you never know. You never know. It's a one-off game. Anything can happen.
Anything could happen, yes. Well, watch this space. You will let us know as and when.
Absolutely. I hope, well, yes, absolutely. I'll be here, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thanks, Freddie. Have a great week ahead, and we look forward to catching up with you soon.
Yes, look forward to it. Hannah, have a great show.
Cheers, you too. Bye.
TRE.
Talk Radio Europe.
The Book Show is on the move again. It will now be every Friday from 2 till 4 p.m., repeated on Wednesdays from 6 till 8 p.m. I hope you continue to enjoy the wonderful authors and people in the book trade that feature on this special show on Talk Radio Europe.
The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.
Moving to Spain is the dream, but the paperwork, the language, trying to sort anything out. Some days, it just feels impossible. Then I get home, and everything just works. Wi-Fi, my phone, calling people whenever I want, and it's all in English. That's why I chose Lobster.
Ultra-fast fibre from just €19.99 a month. Add mobile for just €7.99, with free calls and roaming in the UK. Call 1661 now, or visit lobster.es today. Life's better with Lobster.
As president and spokesperson for this, my home, I officially welcome the sun into every corner of it, especially the new living room.
The sun is coming into your home. Welcome it with the new spring summer collection from Casa Sola Decor. Find us in Marbella and at casasoladecor.com.
US Tax Consultants has been the trusted partner for expatriates in Spain since 1965, specializing in both Spanish and US taxation. At US Tax Consultants, we have an in-depth knowledge of the double taxation treaty. We can help prepare both Spanish tax returns for expats of all nationalities, as well as US tax returns. Don't take risks with your taxes. Schedule your free consultation at ustaxconsultants.es today, or call 915-194-392.
TRE.
Talk Radio Europe.
You're locked in to TRE in the Afternoon with Hannah Murray. Sponsored by La Sala Puerto Banús. Join us for the ultimate social and dining experience, featuring live music 7 nights a week. Discover more at lasalabanus.com.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the Afternoon.
Never had.
Elton John and Philadelphia Freedom. It's just coming up to 5 to 6. Let's have a look at today's financial headlines.
Business news on TRE.
Throughout US President Donald Trump's second term in office, traders have been betting millions of dollars just before he makes major announcements. The BBC has examined trade volume data on several financial markets and matched them to some of the president's most significant market-moving statements. It found a consistent pattern of spikes just hours or sometimes minutes before a social media post or media interview was made public. Some analysts say it bears the hallmarks of illegal insider trading, whereby bets are made by people based on information that is not available to the general public. And the Canadian province of Ontario is now selling a jet recently bought for Premier Doug Ford after he faced criticism for the purchase of the private pre-owned jet for $28.9 million, which is basically about £15.5 million. Ford's office had said he would use it for official travel, including to the US, to advocate against the Trump administration's tariffs. But after confirming the purchase on Friday, he drew flak from political opponents who called it a gravy plane and out of touch. On Sunday, Ford said in a statement that it will be sold as quickly as possible. Despite the best of intentions, I have heard and agree that now is not the right time for the expense of a government plane, he said. That is the business news for today, and that is it from me. I hope you've enjoyed today's show. I will be back tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
You're listening to Talk Radio Europe.